New sanctions on Russia on the eve of the second anniversary of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine.
These sanctions will be targeted at the military-industrialized complex in Russia, but also in third countries, those companies that help facilitate Russia's access to the goods that they want.
Plus, is an independent Palestinian state possible when the fighting stops?
Israel will continue to oppose unilateral recognition of a Palestinian state. Such a recognition in the wake of the October 7th massacre would be a massive and unprecedented reward to terrorism.
And later, American senators are in Ukraine. Today is Friday, February 23rd, and this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. There's a lot going on at the UN. We'll hear from New York in a few minutes. First, though, tomorrow, Saturday, marks the second anniversary of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. President Joe Biden marked the occasion.
2 years ago, shortly before dawn, Russian troops marched across the border in Ukraine. And Putin believed he could easily bend the will and break the resolve of the free people of Ukraine. That he could roll into Ukraine and he would roll over them. 2 years later, he remains wrong. He didn't do that. He wasn't able to do that. Kyiv is still standing. Ukraine is still free. And the people of Ukraine remain unbowed and unbroken in the face of Putin's vigorous onslaught. This is due to their sheer bravery and their sacrifice, but it's also due to us. Remember, the United States pulled together a coalition of more than 50 nations to support Ukraine. We unified and expanded NATO. We can't walk away now. And that's what Putin is betting on. He's betting on we're going to walk away. That's why I'll be speaking to the G7 folks, so some of the heads of the European Union and NATO today. That's why I'm announcing more than 500 new sanctions in response. In response to Putin's brutal war of conquest, in response to Alexei Navalny's death. Because, make no mistake, Putin is responsible for Alexei's death.
And, as he just said, the president announced a new round of sanctions aimed at Russia. Reuters' Diane Toe has that story.
The United States will be slapping sanctions on more than 500 targets linked to Moscow, in action marking 2 years since Russia began its invasion of Ukraine, the number two Treasury official told Reuters on Thursday. It's part of a coordinated Western effort to pile pressure on the Kremlin, with Britain also announcing new sanctions on Thursday and the European Union the day before. In an interview with Reuters, Deputy U.S. Treasury Secretary Wole Adeyemo explained what the sanctions, coming on Friday, aim to do.
Making sure that Russia can't get access to the goods they need to build the weapons that they want, and also taking responsibility for slowing down Russia's access to the revenues they need to prop up their economy, but also to build the weapons that they want going forward. These sanctions will be targeted at the military-industrialized complex in Russia, but also in third countries, those companies that help facilitate Russia's access to the goods that they want.
U.S. President Joe Biden had earlier said major new sanctions were coming in response to the Ukraine invasion, as well as the death of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny, though Moscow has denied responsibility for what happened to him. Biden met with Navalny's widow Yulia Navalnaya and their daughter on Thursday. The White House said Biden expressed his admiration for Navalny's extraordinary courage and his legacy of fighting against corruption and for free and democratic Russia. Meanwhile, the fresh penalties Britain announced take aim at 50 individuals and entities linked to the Russian weapons industry and sources of revenue in the metals, diamonds, and energy industries. Among them are three electronics companies in China. The Chinese embassy in London responded with a statement saying, quote, any action that undermines China's interests will be resolutely countered by the Chinese side. The new rounds of sanctions add to the thousands already targeting Moscow after it began its invasion of Ukraine on February the 24th, 2022, which has so far left tens of thousands of people dead and reduced cities to rubble. Although Russia's economy has performed above expectations in the past 2 years, IMF spokesperson Julie Kozak said on Thursday, it was, quote, clear that Russia is now in a war economy. She pointed to its reliance on military spending to boost weapons production and government subsidies to prop up consumption, while inflation is rising in the country.
That's Diane To of Reuters. And there's more pressure on Russian President Vladimir Putin on Friday. The UN General Assembly met on Friday morning to discuss the situation in Ukraine and Russia on the eve of the second anniversary of Russia's full-scale military invasion. The Security Council will meet later in the day. Margaret Bashir is VOA's UN correspondent. She joins me from New York.
Margaret, it's a busy day at the United Nations. The Security Council will speak later this afternoon, but in the morning, Friday morning, the General Assembly met. What did they discuss? What happened there?
Hi, Steve. Well, those meetings will be going on all day here at the UN in the General Assembly. We have something like 70 countries who are going to speak today. And the foreign minister of Ukraine, Mr. Kuleba, is here, and he wants to shore up global support for Ukraine. You know, we're at the two-year mark. There are a lot of other conflicts in the world going on. I mean, Gaza is all over the headlines, Sudan. So he wants to make sure international attention doesn't fade from Ukraine, particularly at this important time in the war. They're really kind of struggling right now against Russia, and U.S. military aid is held up in the U.S. Congress, so they're anxious. And today's their day to remind everyone that they're fighting not just for Ukraine, but for Europe and for democracy. So he's here to deliver that message. And the message also of peace. He was very clear to say Ukraine wants peace, but it must be just and durable. And he said, if we put the war on hold and just hope that Russia chooses peace, that's not a plan. So he also talked about President Zelensky's peace formula, which has a 10-point plan that he came up with over a year ago that calls for the withdrawal of Russia's troops and the release of prisoners and such. And Ukraine is trying to gain some momentum around it and organize a peace summit in Switzerland. And so he talked about the idea of this meeting and having countries come to discuss the peace plan as sort of a roadmap out of this. But the Russians were already, when they spoke, they were already dismissing Zelensky's peace plan, you know, as much ado about nothing. And they said, the Russian ambassador said, we're ready to do negotiations. We've never abandoned negotiations, but the goals of our special military operation must be met. So it was sort of a half-half response.
And aside from the Russians, how was Kuleba's message received?
Well, we've heard from some Western countries so far, and the American ambassador wanted also to push for global solidarity behind Ukraine. She said Vladimir Putin wants Ukraine to lose its resolve, and he also wants international resolve to fade, but that we must continue to stand with Ukraine and have a unified voice and support them. And the British Foreign Secretary, David Cameron, he was also quite strong. And he said that, you know, don't let this fatigue and other problems cloud you. You know, a compromise might seem attractive, but it's the wrong choice. And we must recognize the cost of giving up. So there was a lot of Western pushes to try and keep support, worldwide support behind Ukraine. The last time we had a vote in the General Assembly, it's been quite a while now, but there are about 140 of the 193 countries came out in support of Ukraine. So they really want to keep that support strong and not see it flag.
And later on Friday, the Security Council will meet. What can we expect?
Well, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres will brief. I expect we'll hear him talk about the UN Charter. That's something he's done repeatedly. He's from the very beginning said Russia's invasion is a violation of it. It's illegal. So I expect we'll hear that from him today and his calls for peace.
Margaret Bashir, New York. Margaret, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to chat with me.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Elsewhere in the world of international diplomacy, although fighting in Gaza shows no signs of ending anytime soon, the international community is looking at the day-after scenario in the Gaza Strip. The United States, and much of the world, says it wants to see a demilitarized Palestinian state headed by a revitalized Palestinian Authority. Israel continues to reject the creation and recognition of a Palestinian state, and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has presented his first official plan for the Gaza Strip once the war there ends. He says Israel will keep security control over all Palestinian areas and make reconstruction of Gaza dependent on its demilitarization. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
With Israelis still traumatized by the October 7th Hamas massacre, the Knesset, Israel's parliament, this week overwhelmingly voted to reject unilateral recognition of a Palestinian state.
Israel will continue to oppose unilateral recognition of a Palestinian state. Such a recognition in the wake of the October 7th massacre would be a massive and unprecedented reward to terrorism.
The international community has sharply condemned Israel's actions in Gaza, which have led to more than 29,000 dead, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry, and a humanitarian crisis in Gaza. They have also said that Gaza must be part of a future Palestinian state. And the Palestinian Authority, which controls the West Bank, sees the current international response to the Israel-Hamas war as an opportunity to push for that state.
The world should not heed the position of Netanyahu and his government, which rejects the two-state solution. Instead, the world should strive to end the occupation, unilaterally recognize the state of Palestine, and vote for Palestine to become a member state in the United Nations.
U.S. news reports say Washington envisions a new regional order in which Israel would agree to a demilitarized Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. In return, Israel would get a long-coveted peace deal with Saudi Arabia, which in turn would get a defense pact with the U.S. Other Arab countries that already have peace agreements with Israel would provide security assurances that the Palestinian state would not become a threat to Israel. Some Palestinian analysts and former peace talks negotiators view the U.S. initiative as unrealistic and not substantive.
When the U.S. talks about a Palestinian state, I don't think there is much clarity about the substance of what this means. When they talk about it, they really are responding to a regional demand to at least have a political horizon.
It has been tried before. In 1993, Israel and the Palestinians, together with U.S. President Bill Clinton, signed the Oslo Accords, laying out a roadmap to a Palestinian state. That never happened. But some Oslo negotiators say it's not too late, even after the October 7th Hamas massacre and ensuing 4 months of war in Gaza.
Usually you make peace after war. Look at the history that we all studies. When did we have in history in Europe or in other places peace treaties afterwards? So usually afterwards, the hatred on both sides increases. So how come? Because people want to get rid of it, of the problem, and eventually are ready to make peace.
But Balin's vision of peace is not in line with current Israeli public opinion, according to a poll by the Israel Democracy Institute that finds two-thirds of Jewish Israelis do not support a Palestinian state, even as part of an agreement that includes peace with Saudi Arabia. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
The post-war situation in Gaza is also on the minds of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who's eyeing a key role in the future. Analysts warn, though, that Erdogan's staunch support of Hamas will spur Israeli resistance. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
With Israeli forces poised to assault Gaza Strip's last city and international efforts building for a ceasefire, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan made it clear during a recent visit to Cairo that he wants a pivotal post-war role. He said Turkey will continue its cooperation and solidarity with its Egyptian brothers in efforts to stop the bloodshed in Gaza. In the medium term, he said, Turkey is ready to work with Egypt for Gaza to recover and rebuild. Turkey has a large construction industry skilled at working overseas in challenging environments. But analysts say UNCRA could be eyeing a role beyond reconstruction. Soli Özel teaches international relations at Istanbul's Kadir Has University.
Turkish government has already made it very clear that they'd be very interested in the reconstruction of Gaza. Whether it will be only left to them is a different question, depending on who does the financing. But there may also be need for a peacekeeping force. I mean, you need to provide security. And there, maybe Turkey can play a role because it does have first the expertise on it.
Erdogan is a staunch supporter of Hamas, describing it as a liberation movement, while calling Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a terrorist. That, analysts say, will make cooperation between the two leaders difficult, if not impossible. However, they say Erdogan may be banking on a changing political landscape as opposition grows in Israel against Netanyahu's coalition government. Sezin Öner is a commentator on Turkey's Politikyol news portal.
He reads the future like Netanyahu will be out of the picture one way or the other, but Hamas will be staying. So I will be on the right side when Hamas stays, and there will be negotiations with Hamas.
But the magnitude of Hamas's October attack on Israel and Erdogan's long history of support for Hamas leads some analysts to warn that damage to Turkey's relations with Israel extends beyond the animosity between the Turkish and Israeli leaders, given Ankara has hosted senior members of Hamas over recent years. Galia Lindenstrauss is an analyst with the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv.
There's a lot of suspicions in Israel against Turkey, both because of its reaction to the war, but also because we know of all this Hamas activity that was going on Turkish soil. I think, again, you can never say never, but on the face of it, it would be very hard for Israel to accept Turkish involvement in the post-Gaza mechanism.
With Qatar and Egypt leading efforts to end the war, analysts say Erdogan is eyeing the potential post-war situation to reassert himself as a critical player. But they say that would require elimination of Israeli distrust. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Ukraine welcomes international allies to mark the second anniversary of the Russian full-scale invasion. VOA correspondent Anna Chernikova has the details from Kyiv.
As Ukraine marks 2 years since the Russian full-scale invasion of Ukraine, a number of high-level foreign visits are taking place. On Friday, President Zelensky met with the Prime Minister of Denmark, Mette Frederiksen, in Lviv. Together, they honored the memory of the fallen defenders of Ukraine and signed a bilateral security agreement for the next 10 years. Denmark became the first country outside of the G7 to sign such an agreement with Ukraine. U.S. senators have also arrived in Lviv on Friday. Chuck Schumer, majority leader of the United States Senate, had the delegation. On X, he mentioned that they are set to meet with President Zelensky on Friday to demonstrate the U.S. support to Ukrainians, to show NATO and European allies that the U.S. stands by Ukrainians, to learn about the weapons that Ukraine vitally needs, and to protect the U.S. democracy and national security. More foreign guests are expected to visit Ukraine over the weekend to mark the occasion. Meanwhile, Ukrainians are preparing for more drone and missile attacks, as Russia is expected to intensify the shelling of Ukrainian territory as the Russian full-scale invasion enters the third year. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
And finally today, another American is detained in Russia as the State Department issues a stark warning to travelers. And following Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny's death, President Biden met with his widow in San Francisco on Thursday. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
During Thursday's meeting in California with Alexei Navalny's widow, Yulia Navalnaya, and their daughter, Dasha, President Joe Biden praised the Russian opposition leader for his extraordinary courage and his legacy of fighting against corruption and for a free and democratic Russia. And at the G20 foreign ministers meeting in Brazil, Secretary of State Antony Blinken had this to say on the eve of expected fresh U.S. sanctions against Russia for its invasion of Ukraine and Navalny's death.
And I just say this about Mr. Navalny, someone truly heroic in his life, in his work, but the fact that Vladimir Putin saw it necessary to persecute, poison, and imprison one man speaks volumes, not about Russia's strength under Putin, but its weakness.
On Wednesday, Russian media showed video of a 33-year-old dual U.S.-Russian citizen being arrested on treason charges. The California woman was visiting her family in the Russian city of Yekaterinburg for the new year. Russian media did not identify the woman, but reported she is charged with treason for supporting Ukraine. Multiple media outlets have identified the woman as Senya Karolina, with some using her former married name, Senya Kavana. In an Instagram post, her Los Angeles employer, CL Spa, said she has been accused of treason for donating $51 to a Ukrainian charity in the United States. The post appealed for her release and read, "To know her is to love her." Her former mother-in-law, Eleonora Sabrowski, spoke to VOA.
On January 2nd, she arrived in Yekaterinburg. She was arrested on January 27th for alleged hooliganism, which in itself is ridiculous. Because knowing Katyusha, this is not the person who will do something bad. I have never heard a bad, swearing, rude word from her in my life. This is a person who brings light, joy, positivity.
In Washington, State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said the United States is seeking consular access to the newly detained American, but said it is often difficult because Russia considers dual citizens to be Russians. Miller issued this stark warning.
The unfortunate truth, though, is that Russia continues to detain its own citizens and continues to detain American citizens, and it's why we have tried to make clear as plainly as we possibly can that no American citizen should consider traveling to Russia for any reason, period, because they are at risk of detention, imprisonment by the Russian regime.
News on Tuesday of Senya's arrest came the same day a court in Moscow ruled to keep fellow American and Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich in custody, pending his trial on espionage charges that he strongly denies. As tributes continue to pour in for Navalny, the opposition leader's grieving mother says she has finally been allowed to see his body, but Russian officials are insisting that they give him a secret funeral. Another jailed Russian opposition leader who returned to Russia voluntarily despite the risk, Vladimir Kara-Murza, spoke via video link from prison on Thursday, asking people in Russia and around the world not to give in to gloom and despair after Navalny's death, but to work even harder to make Russia a normal, free, democratic European country. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
And that's going to wrap up today's show. There is more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until next week, I'm Steve Karish.
Stay up to date with VOA Podcasts. Each weekday, International Edition covers the world's biggest stories, while Flashpoint Iran and Flashpoint Ukraine examine their respective regions in depth every week.